Hi, Cornelius. How are you today?
Okay, you can call me Con, C-O-N.
Okay, Con. Could you tell us a little bit about your expertise in the nonprofit world?
Well, I've been working in the nonprofit area since the 80s. I got involved at that time, and if you're old enough to recall, there was something called the Massachusetts Miracle that fell apart, and there were a lot of healthcare institutions in trouble at the time. And I was, because I work in the commercial area, debt finance and bankruptcy, I got a lot of experience, you know, sitting in hospital boardrooms while they tried to work out their debt and keep their doors open and keep their patients in their beds. And since then, I've done everything from education to the arts. Still do a fair amount of healthcare here, but in education, we represent everything from a preschool to a graduate professional school. And in the arts, we have all kinds of little organizations and some fairly big ones. So
Con, how did you? I mean, is this how you began your practice? Getting into cleaning up a mess called the Massachusetts Miracle for healthcare?
Well, if you recall that, I mean, it was it was part PR, but it was also part just a change in the healthcare industry. There was a change in the reimbursement method, and all of a sudden, the hospitals were literally sending their computer tapes for reimbursement to the state in cabs to see who could get there first to get the money, because the state was running out of money on Medicaid. And so you had a lot of hospitals that had taken out bank loans or issued tax-exempt bonds all of a sudden with payments coming due and not enough revenue to pay them. So it was, you know, that crisis, you know, was the forge and or the crucible in which my experience was first forged.
Con, are you still there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Just thought I heard a click. Your client base is pretty broad. What do you specialize in extensively in the nonprofit world, or is it everything?
Well, it's everything, because you qualify at two levels. First, at the state level, you know, you form a corporation that is a charitable corporation, organized not to make money, but to pursue a charitable end. And then the next step is you go to the Internal Revenue Service and you become a tax-exempt organization so that you can attract tax-deductible donations and apply for grants with foundations that require you to be IRS qualified as what's called a 501c3 or some other designation for, you know, different kinds of charitable nonprofit organizations. So that those categories apply regardless of what the organization does, whether it's healthcare, education, arts, human services. You know, the IRS treats them and the state treats them all as, you know, as charitable organizations generally.
So Con, how do your clients find you, or are you finding them, or a combination of both?
Well, it is mainly by word of mouth, I would say, and referrals from existing nonprofit clients. I mean, we've had, you know, we have some nonprofit clients that go back literally almost to the beginning of this firm over 50 years ago. And it often happens that, you know, a partner from long ago sat on the board of a hospital or a rehabilitation facility or something like that, and eventually we began to do, you know, legal work for them. And then it's basically word of mouth, and it's not everybody, you know, all lawyers have been marketing since 1979, I guess it was, when the Supreme Court said that, you know, lawyers could actually advertise their services. But mainly in this area, it's you don't see a lot of billboards on the Southeast Expressway, you know, for people offering to do work for nonprofit organizations, you know, what the way you do for slip and fall injuries. So.
No, I understand. So within that domain, you can help with the structure, the formation, as well as any other challenges that come along.
Right. At the structuring at the beginning, and we do it from cradle to grave. That's correct. At the structuring end, you know, we're often faced with clients who are sort of confused about what they want to do. I mean, a typical situation: somebody will come in and say, "Well, I'm going to start a for-profit business, but I want to give some of the money to charity, so I want to set it up as a for-profit that does charitable works, but I'm going to, you know, pay myself a salary, and of course we're going to make money." And we have to tell them, well, it's either a sheep or a goat. You've got to pick one or the other. If you want to make money and do good, then you should make money, take it in, and make a personal contribution to another charity, as opposed to mixing things up, because there are rules at the federal level under the tax code that prevent you from operating a nonprofit the way you would a for-profit company.
I guess with the atmosphere the way it is today and everybody trying to do well and do the right thing, that happens a lot, especially with startups.
It does, and we've had to discourage a couple of people in the last year, for example. I mean, one woman had a very good idea about it's sort of a make-a-wish for adults. That is, you know, somebody would come in and they'd always wanted to fly a glider, and they would and she would set up a glider lesson on Cape Cod, and the person would learn how to, and they'd get the experience of flying in the glider, and then they'd pay something on top of that, which was supposedly a charitable component. And we had to tell her that's you're mixing apples and oranges here, and it's something that the IRS, it's going to take a lot of time for them to look at this and try and figure it out. You're better off just taking the money in, you know, charge the person for the gliding lesson, and then if you want to give, you know, 20% of that to another charity, that's perfectly okay, but, you know, you don't want to mix the two together.
How complicated is that discussion with a client, because it's so embedded, and I deal with startups, I also deal with nonprofits. My biggest challenge is, CEOs and leaders and creative people really will die on their idea rather than let that go and move forward and do kind of a hybrid of that idea.
All right. It is certainly true that the visionary startup entrepreneur is often not the person to execute the idea.
Right.
And we see that over and over again in the nonprofit world, where someone comes up with a great idea, and I've been involved in, you know, startup schools, for example, that have a great idea about introducing inner city kids to, you know, business techniques and business etiquette and accounting, so they're ready to, you know, job ready. But the person who has that vision is often not the one who's actually qualified to run a school. And so there's this disconnect, I think, sometimes between the visionaries and the executive. I mean, who would be the chief executive officer of the charity that's going to carry it through? And unfortunately, you know, people spend a lot of time spinning their wheels sometimes, both at the beginning and at the handoff point. I mean, you know, 2 or 3 years into the operation, when you've got the thing up and running, you begin to understand that, well, the person who gets everyone excited with her vision is not the person who's going to be able to make payroll every Friday, and so you have to replace her.
Right. Entrepreneurs are not always the best CEOs, and I run into that as an advertiser, sitting in with a startup, and even some of these young companies, we realize that nobody's finding them really because the CEO doesn't have a clear direction on what it is that they're looking for, who they're looking for, and they're sitting down with a marketing guy in an advertising company, and they're saying, well, we don't know our core audience, and they're asking us to help them find their core audience when they really don't know their core audience. So that's kind of a big moment.
You know, sometimes this, I suppose the flip side of that is sometimes organizations spend so much time on their vision statement, they never get the plane off the ground. Once you get the group of people together as a board or whatever who are focused on a mission, I've seen people just spend, you know, countless hours on putting together a mission statement when everybody knows what they're there for. I mean, either you're going to help this class of people who need help, or you're going to do this function, education or healthcare or whatever. And, you know, sometimes it's just you have to get people to stop talking and start doing.
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal, Con. I imagine that's a tough discussion. I've had to step away from a couple projects myself where these people just aren't getting it, and I understand that. What's the best way for us to reach you? It's been great having you and some great insight. We'd love to have you in again.
You can always call me directly, or you can find us on the internet at burnslive.com, and you can send a message actually through the website to individual attorneys, and that's, I think, the easiest way for people who are have questions in this area.
All right, great. I look forward to talking to you again and perhaps meeting in person.
Okay.
Thank you.